Hi, this is Andrew, and this is Keen On, the daily now.tv chat show with some of the world's leading thinkers and writers. Hello, everybody. Over the last few days, I've seen a couple of interesting movies, both about American Civil War. I rewatched Glory, the 1989 movie about Black American soldiers in the 19th century American Civil War. And then, of course, like everybody else, I've seen Alex Garland's Civil War, an updated version, I guess, in some ways, although it's a controversial film. One man who was impressed with it is my guest today, an old friend, Stephen Marsh. He's been on the show before. He's the author of The Next Civil War, Dispatches from the American Future. He's been on the show talking about it. And Stephen had an interesting piece in the New York Times last week from April 11th talking about why Garland's new movie, Civil War, matters for reasons different than you think. And Stephen is joining us from Toronto. Stephen, explain why this movie, at least in your view, is so important.
Well, I think, there's a visions of this of a possible civil war have been quite popular in the on the right in America for a long time, at least since 1978 and the publication of the Turner Diaries, which was a mass seller and also an inspiration for a lot of white power movements. With the new movie, which is less necessarily about what I do, like understanding the causes of civil war and the threats of civil war, is more of an action movie about the possibilities of what this might look like. Seems to me like it's good to do that just so that people understand the stakes here. I mean, I remember one of the first interviews I ever did for The Next Civil War was on some right-wing station. I forget, America Online Network or something like that. And the interviewer said to me at one point, he was like, do you think maybe a civil war wouldn't be the worst thing? Maybe it would help clear the air. And I was like, the first time, like nearly 3% of the American population died, a civil war is the worst thing that can happen to a country. I mean, I think genuinely being occupied by a foreign power is probably better for a country than a civil war. I think there's a kind of casual sense of American exceptionalism, we can't really be harmed here. And of course they can, they have been, right? And so I think to make that possibility realistic, to give it a kind of narrative framework, is actually useful.
It's doing well, the movie. Hasn't done particularly well in terms of reviews. We'll get to that later. But it's the number one box office opening of the week, and it's broken the A24 record, the production house. You think one reason for its popularity, Stephen, is because Americans recognize that it's a possibility?
Absolutely. I mean, I think people think about it a lot. We're heading into an American election that's going to be very fraught and is ripe with possibilities of dissension and disunion. And I think Americans worry about that. I mean, I think that's, I think you have, if you're not worried about it, you're not paying attention. I think it is definitely top of mind. I mean, I think the fact that he removed the politics from it, and the politics that he did put in was pretty absurd, it helped in a way, because you're not really processing the causes or who's to blame or what happened. You're just talking about the consequences, the fallout on human beings, and that's a powerful choice in its own way. I think that was where most of the criticism came from, that there's just a lot of absurdity in it. But I don't think you necessarily go to movies like that for them to be sensible. I think if you want sensible, go to my book, right? I think it's definitely on the mind.
I never thought of you, Stephen, as sensible. You're many things.
It's not necessarily that I'm
mean
sensible.
That as a, I don't mean that as a criticism.
No. I know what you mean, but I think it's, I know who the sensible people are, And I was able to get there. Like, if you want to hear the sensible opinions, I have them in the book. That's to be more accurate about it.
Well, Stephen, it's not shy. If you've seen the film and you haven't read the book, read the book. As he said, there's been some criticism. LA Times said that it hedged its politics. The New Yorker went further, describing the movie as how to be a both sides a civil war. It never covered it. Stephen, remind everyone of the plot or the absence of a plot. What's the situation in the America of Garland's Civil War? It's an odd one.
Well, as far as I can tell, there's a third term American president. So that's actually pretty impossible. Like, as someone who's...
Well, I don't know. Trump's already talking about... It's not that impossible, is it?
It would require a constitutional amendment, which would require a national consensus at the gubernatorial level that is simply inconceivable, frankly. I mean, like, just in terms of, like, legally getting over that threshold, you wouldn't be a third... You'd just be dictator, right? So it's, like, that's not super credible, but I think the thing that's a bit more outlandish is the Texas, California being on the same side. I mean, from my point of view, like, if Texas and California could agree enough to ally themselves together, there wouldn't be a civil war, right? The fact that they are so different is kind of the nub of the problem. So is one of the problems. And then I think there's also some Florida thing, but that's mostly from the PR material.
There's always really a Florida thing.
Florida's a thing right now. Who knows what it is?
It's sort of dangling. We won't describe it in phallic
graphic terms.
It's be dangling off America. I actually thought that the California-Texas bit was interesting in the way it was presented. One of the journalists noted that the third term American president had gutted the U.S. state. So both the Californians, I guess, and the Texans were sort of dealing with a vacuum of power, which is not that unrealistic, especially in the Trumpian context of him almost being proud of gutting the state.
Well, I would just, you know... None of that's super possible. It's not the U.S. Constitution is a bizarre and Byzantine document that's increasingly dysfunctional. But the problem is not that executive power can do too much with it. It's that no one can do anything with it, right? The problem in America is not that you can change its structures, its governmental structures, with ease. The problem is that any change of any kind is increasingly almost impossible. In fact, basic government tasks like funding their own government are increasingly difficult to do, right? So, like, it's one of those things, like, I often find with these political fantasies, I don't know if you ever read Submission by the French novelist, but, you know, he imagines this. Well, it's a very interesting book. It's a very compelling book because it imagines like an Islamist takeover of the French state. But of course that was like that. The reason that's not credible is because, there's no, like, that's not political solidarity of that kind is exactly the opposite problem of what you actually have in France, right? Like, and similarly, there's this, like, this fantasy that a U.S. president, even in extreme forms of political chaos, could take really extreme executive action over the United States. I mean, American people are not an obedient people. I mean, I say that as a 100% as a compliment, but, you know, they're not going to permit that. So the frame of the film is not particularly credible, but that's not really what it's about. What it's about is the violence that civil war brings with it, which is perfect. You know, the thing is, like, it's when you look at civil wars and what they look like what's going on in Haiti right now, the brutality of it is so extreme. That it becomes, when you get into these totalizing wars of meaning, sort of all humanity gets lost very, very quickly.
And I wonder,
captured that.
Yeah, Garland was interviewed in the Times. You may have seen the interview.
Oh, I didn't see
this. Asking why he left out the politics, why he left out any explanation of really why there was a civil war. And he said, and I'm quoting him, he said, it's only an issue related to this country, but it's not. You can see it right now playing out in Israel. You can see it happening in Asia, in South America, Europe. You can see it in my own country, which is, of course, the UK.
Yeah.
Is that really true in your analysis? Yeah. Is America like everywhere else? Because there's always going to be conflict, people not liking one another.
No, I mean, well, like, I think there is the attitude that one might have believed, certainly that many people believed when I was young, that America was the solution to history and was, you know, exempt from the forces of history. I think that's definitely not true. Like the possibility of violence coming for the United States is possible as it is for every other country, like Chile or whatever, or other countries that have experienced civil war. Certainly, I don't think it's vast wealth and its huge productivity will save it. In that sense, which seems to be the kind of idea. But, you know, I think like the UK is actually a very interesting example, because even though it's fraught with the same tensions, the fact that its governmental structure is still highly functional means that it's really not subject to anywhere near the same kind of violence as the United States. I mean, there are other reasons for that, obviously, including things like the British character and so on. But like, the truth is that when you study these models, like, autocracies and democracies are very stable societies. They tend not to have a lot of violence. But when you're in the middle, when no one can tell what's legitimate, and what is and who is legitimately in power, that's when the violence starts to get out of control and violence starts to become the political solution.
But so, it was a full, you've argued, and you've argued this on the show in your book, and you wrote an interesting piece for The Independent earlier this week, that America's next civil war has already started. I don't really understand.
That's a British journalist putting a headline on an interview by me.
I know, but that's their interpretation of what you're saying. Do you believe that the American Civil War has already begun?
Well, I mean, civil war, like the threshold for civil war for PRIO, for the Peace Research Institute of Oslo, is 1,000 combatant deaths a year. So America is not at that threshold at all. And it's actually relatively far away. And also, whether that threshold is particularly meaningful in a country as big and diverse as geographically diverse as the United States is another question. But I would say that, you know, the United States already falls into their category of civil strife. There is relatively widespread political violence, and it's kind of easy to forget this, but a huge majority of Republicans really feel that that Biden is not the legitimate president of their country. Right. And that they are effectively being ruled over by an illegitimate government.
And a lot of Democrats thought the same about Trump when he was in
power. Absolutely. Yet not my president. Right. So like, this is on a spectrum, right? Like there is a spectrum of violence, and there is a spectrum of illegitimacy, and there is a spectrum of institutional collapse. America is absolutely has not crossed over the point where you would describe that as civil war. But it is on that spectrum, and it is moving in that direction. So that's what I would say. Like, the terms themselves are not particularly useful necessarily in describing the reality. But we can all feel that there is. I mean, I'm sure you've had friends run for positions of power, and like, I had friends run for positions of power in Hudson Valley. Like, I'm talking like dog catcher level, alderman kind of things. And they're subject to violence, right? Like, they're subject to threats of violence. And, you know, that's just simply not the case.
I mean, one thing that's for sure is America is an astonishingly, I mean, perhaps uniquely violent society. You get to guns and all that. I wonder whether the movie, as I said, has done very well in America. It's a movie without really a past or a future. It doesn't have an explanation. It has no references to American history. Is that, again, perhaps one reason, a a movie that suffers from its own kind of amnesia is suitable for a country that also suffers amnesia.
Well, I mean, certainly people love action movies, and that's what it is. It's a disaster.
Right, it's an action movie. Exactly. It's a super. It's almost disaster a superhero. Movie,
instead of a volcano going off, the U.S. government falls. Right, like, and just as the details of the science of the volcano exploding or an asteroid hitting Earth are dealt with shallowly, if at all, in Hollywood movies, like, it's the same with this, right? I mean, I don't even really mean that as a criticism. Like, I just think that's very obvious. And it is interesting, the critical response and some of the response I've seen online where people are like, well, like, you should talk about the causes, right? Like, you should talk about what's happening. But that particular film would be a different film. Right. And, you know, we are in a moment where there's a lot of, like, there's a long tradition of post-apocalyptic movies, Mad Max, et cetera. This one is like The Hunger Games and so on. Like, this is an established genre.
But this is from Alex Garland, who's a much more serious filmmaker. He made a wonderful movie about AI. I have to admit,
he makes genre movies. Right. That, again, is not a criticism. Like, he makes very sophisticated entries into genre films, and this is his disaster movie. You know, the last one was his science fiction movie. This is his disaster movie.
Yeah, I don't want to insert too much my own opinion, but I think he did a much better job with the AI movie. I don't think it was a good description of America in Civil War in the sense that it was too neat and tidy.
Well, you know, it's like, to me, like, the vision of Civil War that I have in the next Civil War is certainly not geographical, right? Like, it's not divided. It's not states going to war against states. Like, I mean, that's not.
And there was a front, right? So it's not really your next Civil War. There were fronts in this movie, and the fronts.
I mean, I don't know what that is. Like,
where he imagines
there's no future that I can envision
closing in on DC and then capturing the White House.
No, there's no, that's literally impossible. Like, I mean, you know, like the Texas National Guard going up against the U.S. Marines. I mean, that's not on the cards. Like, as someone, like, honestly, if it were on the cards, I would have put a chapter in my book about it because I wanted those kind of scenes as much as possible. But
and if there was, I mean, the one scene I thought the best scene in the film, which perhaps reflects your book, was the scene in the gas station where a couple of local boys had hung their schoolhood friend. So that's
right.
Much more realistic.
That's what you see when civil war breaks out in, like, South Africa, or like when you
or
have
Bosnia,
you know, or Bosnia, or Northern Ireland, right, with the troubles, or Syria. It's that kind of chaos that it looks like. Like, I mean, you know, it's something much closer to what happens at Kyle Rittenhouse or in that whole narrative than, you know, troops going up, like Texas troops going up against federal troops. I mean, it's very hard for me to imagine a scenario where that would, in fact, it's impossible for me to imagine a scenario.
And if Stephen Marsh can't imagine it, it's probably not likely. We're talking with the great Stephen Marsh, the author of The Next Civil War, many other books. He's written on AI. He's writing on celebrity. He writes on everything. I want to remind everyone that great guests like Stephen are brought to us by our friends at Liberties, an excellent new quarterly journal of culture and politics. Going to run a short feature on Liberties, and then I want to come back and talk with Stephen about journalists and the Civil War, because if there is one serious message, I think, in Garland's new movie, it's about the value and importance of journalism. So we'll be back in a second.
News, the noise, there is nuance, insight. Liberties is not just a journal of ideas. It's a meteor of intelligent substance. It's the place to be for engaged citizens. Politics, opinion, substance. Liberties is a triumph for freedom of thought. A quarterly of urgency, of cultural exploration, of intellectual delight, of immaculate prose. It's invaluable. Subscribe now or find Liberties at your favorite bookseller.
And you can subscribe to Liberties at libertiesjournal.com. We're speaking with Stephen Marsh, the author of, I think it was a bestseller last year, The Next Civil War, Dispatches from the American Future. That future is caught up with us, at least in the movie theater, a new movie out by Alex Garland, Civil War, written and directed by him. Stephen, the most serious aspect, I think, of the film, and if there is a message, it's the importance of journalists. All the movie is about, it's a road movie of three, or actually four journalists, two photographers, a traditional old-fashioned journalist, and then a guy, I'm not quite sure what he did, maybe a kind of online-style journalist, and their journey on the front. What was your sense of the importance of journalists in the movie, and indeed your view of Garland, I think,'s argument that without journalism, civil war is more likely?
Well, I mean, you know, on the one hand, it's kind of great because it's been a long time since there's been a journalist hero in a movie. You know what I mean? Like, they tend to be villains. Like, I think they were villains in the Harry Potter movies. And remember the movie where Jude Law played a journalist during a pandemic, where he was just like the scum of the earth, and, you know, sharp objects, like, you know, these, like, you know, you've known as many journalists as I do. The idea that a female journalist is going to sleep with a source, like, that's not realistic. That's not how these people are. It's not how we are at all. Of course, you know, one of the first things that you notice in Civil War conditions is that information breakdown is more or less complete. There is, like, the idea that there are, I mean, I remember one of the reasons I wrote The Next Civil War is that I was sent by a Canadian magazine to cover the 2016 inauguration in Washington. And when you would go to you'd see these, like, anarchists or whatever they were. I guess, I don't know if they call themselves anarchists. They were arrested as anarchists anyway, wearing black. And then you would see, like, white power people. And what they did with each other was point cameras at each other. The Canon Rebel had just come out, a very cheap DSLR camera that took relatively decent video. And it had gone on sale on Black Friday for $399. And everyone at that inauguration had bought one. They were engaged in competitive narrative war. That was what was absolutely obvious to me. You know, civil wars tend to be preceded by informational breakdown, right? I mean, a very interesting example of this actually is the English Civil War in the 1640s, which was preceded by the pamphlet culture, which England deregulated and France didn't. France, everything needed to go through the king. And in England, it was basically wide open. And this created a huge influx of more or less insanity, right? Like, crazy religious theories flourished, crazy medical theories, crazy theories of all kinds were published in this cheap paper, and managed to cause real havoc, informational havoc. There are other examples of that, of course, are, you know, Rwanda. There are many cases where you have real information breakdown before you have violence. I mean, I think a major contributor to the current fracture of the United States is that its information networks are essentially polluted beyond recognition.
Is this cause or effect, though? Is it a consequence or a cause, or are they so interrelated they're hard to separate?
It's very, very hard to say. I mean, I plan to have a whole chapter in The Next Civil War on social media. And then I realized as I was doing the research, I was like, well, Germany and Canada both have deeper penetration of social media in populations, and they don't have breakdown, right? It's actually it's the way that it's used, right? And the way that people respond to it. It's, you know, it's a complex cascading system. It's the way that these technologies interact with particular cultures. I mean, America is a culture where you can start your own religion. People do it all the time.
They've always done it. I mean,
they've always done it.
The beginning,
right?
Even before independence.
100%. I mean, go to Spain and try and start your own religion. Like, it's not going to happen, right? Like, or, I mean, here, forget it too. But like,
a couple of months ago, we were in Barcelona together. There's better things to do in Spain than start your own religion.
Now, if you came up with a new way to prepare ham, like that might lead you to similar messianic realities. But the point is that like the information, the idea that there's going to be like journalists are at the center of the causes of civil war. Right. And any journalist, we already know, like the journalists who are considered in the center, what does that even mean at this point? Like, well, I consider
the old,
myself,
the old argument, the old joke about Texas, if you're in the center of the road, you're roadkill.
Yeah. I mean, there's no center of the road in journalism now. Like, what institutions would that qualify as? Like, I don't think, like, certainly no one would believe on the right that the New York Times is a centrist newspaper, right? And certainly no one on the left would consider Fox News, fair and unbiased or whatever they call themselves. Like, it's that fracture has already happened. So again, it's a bit of, like, I understand why he did it. There is nothing more important to me than the observers. Like, I consider myself very proud to be one of those people, to be one of the people who see what is happening and try to relate and describe what is happening.
Didn't you think, though, that it was odd that, firstly, they chose photography as the dominant sort of medium to build his narrative? And secondly, there was an entire absence of real-time coverage. These were traditional journalists. I don't even know what they were doing with their content. They were taking photos. Right. They weren't posting them online. They didn't have an audience. It was very odd.
What, are they going to put them in Life magazine or something?
Exactly. Like, I mean, that was the assumption that somehow they had editors somewhere who were waiting for their stories.
Yeah. Well, exactly. I mean, you know, this is not a particularly credible vision of civil war.
But then why use journalists if it's not, it's like 20th century or even 19th century journalism? I mean, the movie, my wife said to me that in Glory, which is an excellent film about the 19th century American Civil War, there was a journalist who was much more credible. He covered the troops and wrote about them. But the journalists in Civil War are just weird.
I think there's an Onion article that's like, the part that's unbelievable about Superman is that he'd have a daily job at a newspaper.
Right.
Like, those are all gone. Like, it's like, you can't have Superman. I mean, sure, he can fly around because he's from the planet Krypton, but like a desk job at like a city paper, like, no, that's totally unrealistic. I mean, I think he used a photojournalist because they're supposed to be unbiased, right?
Well, they take pictures, which you can't, I guess you can't lie, although we know you can lie about
Although them, we know you can. And like, certainly photojournalists are no less biased than any other kind of journalist. In fact, in my experience, they're the most partisan of any journalist. But this is not a movie for people who really know how journalism works, right? Like, I think the guy who, you know, the oil rig drillers who were sent up to break up an asteroid also probably weren't credible to oil rig drillers, you know. Like it's a very Hollywood film.
Yeah, it's certainly a very Hollywood film. What did you think of the main male journalist figure who was a sort of Hail Mary character trying to get an interview with the dying president?
Well, I mean, I guess it works narratively, you know. Like, I think it's all. I don't have any objection to any of it, really, as long as you take it on the grounds that you take it on, which is that this is an action film with that kind of takes the Civil War, the concept of political division as a constant. Like, I think if you think too long about, like, okay, a third term American president, like, what would have had to happen in the United States for that to have occurred? It's not really possible. Right. Like, I think anyone who takes it too seriously or you're going to be disappointed. But I don't think that's not what he's doing. He's trying to put it as a human face And to say, you know, I think that quote from the Times where he's like, this stuff is happening all over the world. Like, you know, the with the tire over the person's head.
Yeah.
Like that happened, right? Like that, he's not making that up. Like that happened in other places. Like there's a country in the world with almost 13 million people in it where the person with the most power in the whole country is a gang lord named Barbecue. And like, that's not a sequel to Mad Max or like that's a living reality for nearly 13 million of our fellow human beings. And I guess the idea that that can't happen in America, that's it's definitely not true. That can happen in America.
So finally, Stephen, you've written this book, The Next Civil War, Dispatches from the American Future. You said that it's not inevitable. It's not happening now. For Americans who don't want a civil war, a real civil war, and that presumably includes almost all Americans, what do we need to do? You're in Canada. You can give us some advice for once.
Look, there's big things that are very difficult and require a lot of attention, like a constitutional convention. But, you know, here's a starter, like open primaries. Like that's super, not, all you need to get open primaries is for both parties to agree that they're in a toxic death spiral. Like, and that their funding wings are going to matter. Their funding this quarter is going to matter less than the future of their country. Like, open primaries would really, I mean, it's not like that's a, would say, save everything or is some kind of panacea. But when you do that, like they did in Alaska, you remove a lot of extremism from the political process almost immediately. And it's 100% doable. And I don't really understand why. Well, the reason that it's not happening is because there's this duopoly of power in the United States where it's against their self-interests to make the country habitable. And it's like, I think a film like Civil War, like what it can do, and what I hope my book can do too, is to say like, you know, now is the time to take the exit ramp for all of you. Like, and there are many exit ramps. It's not like, it's not like you need to get more violent. It's like, but you need to start taking them now.